We're going to start today with a conversation with Eric Frankel, CEO of MemSQL. Eric, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you, Surma. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Eric, let's start by having you introduce your company, MemSQL, to the audience. Tell us what you do, and then we'll dive into your entrepreneurial journey a bit.
Well, thanks. Sure. MemSQL is a real-time data warehouse focused on analytics for the enterprise. You can consider us very much in the big data space. And we started the company all the way back in 2011. So it's been 6 years and counting, and we grow every year. It's a lot of fun.
So you are a Stanford grad, and you worked at Facebook before joining Y Combinator in early 2011. What did you apply to Y Combinator with? What was the idea? How did you come up with it? And also talk about your co-founder and his expertise in databases, because that is your core technology background.
Yeah. So it's a good place to start, I'd say, that I actually met my co-founder the very first day of Facebook out of serendipity. We just sat down next to each other at orientation, and we became great friends. Later did I discover that Nikita was a phenomenal database engineer. And when we started thinking what it would be to do a company together and what we were seeing internally at Facebook at the time, this was back in 2010, it really was seeing the future a few light years ahead of schedule. Facebook was coping with challenges that many companies today are really now facing with respect to big data. And it became very clear to us what we could do with a new type of database technology by seeing how Facebook was contending and wrangling with their own big data challenges. So this was an idea that we applied to Y Combinator with, and by early 2011, we had to come to this decision to actually either stay at Facebook, go for the IPO as the rest of the company would, or we would leave and join YC. And I think we made the right decision. We decided to leave Facebook and start a company. It was literally two guys and a dog going through Y Combinator in the winter 2011 class.
And your in 2011, when everybody was talking about NoSQL databases and so on and so forth, you actually went for a relational database architecture. Talk a little bit about how you managed to convince the Y Combinator people that that was the right direction to go. Did they understand what the implications were?
Oh, of course. I mean, 6 years ago, infrastructure that was delivered to customers on-prem was considered to have become an open source methodology, meaning that most businesses that were now creating infrastructure software were doing so with an open source business model. And on top of that, we were also in a position where we wanted to deliver relational database technology, but in a modern implementation. And both of these ideas were very contrarian, both the open source business model being inefficient, which was a contrarian idea, and then the notion that NoSQL itself was more of a feature and not an actual true market for a larger industry, was also pretty contrarian. People really thought that SQL had hit its end of the road, but what we have done with the company is really taken SQL, which is effectively just math, and scaled it onto many machines. So we have fully distributed joins. It's very, very complex transactional properties, all working in a distributed fashion. So it's a lot of plumbing underneath the covers, but what we wanted to give our customers was an easy-to-use interface. And one of the benefits of selecting SQL is that it's a universal language around the world and in every company. Business people can use it, engineers can use it, analysts as well. So when we wanted to build a database, and the fact that Nikita had a wonderful amount of expertise in building relational database technology, it was clear that if we were going to build a relational database, it had to be a distributed relational database. And we did a lot more innovation with the core product. Mem stands for memory. And therefore, what we created and pitched to Y Combinator was a distributed in-memory relational database. That would ultimately be used for real-time analytics at large companies and other businesses.
So you applied to Y Combinator with an idea that you watched in action in Facebook from a use cases point of view and thought that other enterprises would need similar technology as data balloons and enterprises want to take real-time action on that data. In effect, you proposed a fast startup to Y Combinator. It was at the time one of Y Combinator's first enterprise deals. Y Combinator at the time was mostly doing B2C. How did Y Combinator process your application?
Well, you know, we were one of the first enterprise startups to go through YC. And it was very well received in terms of what the idea was. I think Y Combinator loves big, audacious ideas. And MemSQL is certainly that for its industry. Our industry is a $36 billion a year industry. And most of that revenue is held by five top players, which are more acting as an oligopoly over the market. Very little innovation in the space. A lot of it is the customers having to pay through the nose for technology that is no longer innovative. So when we proposed this and later talked to other VCs, it was pretty clear that the market opportunity was massive, and therefore the team had to be there to actually create the vision and deliver the technology and the product. So in the notion of what is MemSQL as a company, you just really can't bootstrap a database company from square one. You need to actually fund it to do so with a commercial licensing model. You would find in other areas that open source databases typically would actually be created by a core set of committers over time. You would find an open source developer community who are around that piece of technology. And then VCs would still have to apply venture capital to create a service wrapper type of business around that open source code. With MemSQL, we actually started, I think, very conservatively. And again, this is all relative in light of what it takes to build a enterprise company startup in big data. But our initial fundraising was only about $2.1 million. Which was there to develop the initial first build of the product and launch it to market as fast as we could, which we did in June of 2012. So certain businesses, I would say, are only possible through venture capital. A database certainly is one of them.
Well, and I think the Valley has a long history of doing core technology fundings, but there are certain nuances to that. I think in your case, my read is that the fact that you had seen, one, you had Nikita and the domain knowledge that Nikita brought to the party, and then two, you had seen from the inside what was going on at Facebook in terms of technology use cases and so forth, and you were also bringing that additional domain knowledge into the play. So, my read with watching so many fast startups, as we call them, being funded in the Valley, we have studied it quite closely. Domain knowledge is one of the core, requirements for getting any investor to touch actually fast startups, and you clearly had that.
Thank you. Yeah, you have to have an expert on the team to really go after a particular vertical or industry. For Nikita, he had spent a number of years in the space working at Microsoft, and then previous to that, his entire education from bachelor's, master's, and PhD was in database theory. So for that reason, it was very straightforward to apply to Y Combinator with this type of idea.
Now, what about customer use cases? You saw what Facebook was doing, but it was 2011. The big data side of the market had not quite exploded yet on the enterprise side, but your hypothesis was that enterprises would start doing some of these use cases, highly real time and data intensive use cases. What did you learn? Did you talk to customers? What did you learn? And I'm still talking about that very early time frame, the Y Combinator or immediately after Y Combinator time frame.
Yeah, so the funny thing with the database is that it takes a really long time to build one. And how do you actually then take that reality, which is that it would take us at a minimum 18 months of solid work around the clock to ship the first version, with the need to acquire a customer. And the reality is that even though you are building a very complex piece of technology, you are still able to engage with certain opportunities along the way that are really to guide you in your product development roadmap and deliverables. So I say that we achieved our first customer, if you will, inside of Y Combinator. This was about 4 to 5
Maureen, somebody is streaming. One second, Eric. Somebody is streaming noise into the call. Could you please mute the other line that is in? Okay, go ahead, Eric. I think that's better.
Sure. So was just mentioning that our first quote unquote customer was actually a fellow YC company in our batch that really needed our help to scale some of their growing pains. So that was our first real ability to kind of just work with a company or a startup that was going through its own scaling challenges, and we could understand where we could help them. We did deliver an in-memory framework. It wasn't a database. It wouldn't be a database for many, many more months. But we were able to at least show and prove to them and help that the notion of main memory processing could be very helpful for any type of web scale. That's actually what got us an investor. So Ashton Kutcher was an investor in that particular startup. When he had heard the good work that we had done to save that investment, he gave us a call, and I said, of course, come on in. We're wrapping up our seed round through YC. But along the way, once we actually left Y Combinator, we got our first actual paying customer in about 8 months of starting the firm, again, because you never want to develop in a vacuum. Even though we were building a very, very complex piece of technology, you want to be testing your hypotheses, talking to the customer to see what needs they have that they would like filled with your software. So that process was an incredible thing. That was actually Lady Gaga's social network at the time. This was the Backplane all the way back in 2011. And again, it was a similar type of use case where they had a very complex big data challenge. At that point, we had a team of engineers that could help solve it in a database fashion. So we gave them the very first version of MSQL, which was a version of the software just for them and just to that particular workload. And we did that because you need to build against a real set of circumstances and conditions. And it took us a few more months to actually graduate from that early process of building custom towards building it a general purpose with the actual database software. That happened by the fall of 2012, where we actually acquired Zynga as our first enterprise cloud customer. That was our first real enterprise customer that we saw actual repeatability in the use case, and we knew that there'd be other customers like that. And again, that was really a two-year journey just to get to call it two customers. And along the way, you wanted to validate with market research and other things to make sure you were building the right thing.
And what kind of use cases were you hearing from that market research and talking to enterprise customers? What at that time in 2011-12, what were customers thinking, enterprise customers thinking they would build in your realm or with your technology?
You know, back in 2011 and 2012, it was very much a focus on distributed type of infrastructure. So this was a period where a lot of the bigger players were still running on appliance models. By the way, they still are. 5 years in IT is not a long period of time to get a fast switch in many cases. But in 2011, it was really a focus of how could you run a truly distributed database that was fully relational. We made it very fast by elevating that data into main memory for fast processing and storage. But for us, we just saw this need that if you could get businesses off the appliance model, which is a very expensive, vertically scaled piece of hardware, to a horizontally scalable architecture like Facebook, that would be the future. So it was really seeing, again, how easy it was for a company like Facebook to deploy 500 servers at a time with a click of a button. And we knew that would be the reality many years later. Of course, the cloud is here with us today. Amazon is on a 10-plus billion run rate with AWS. So now most businesses can use very cheap hardware on the cloud to run distributed workloads. And a database like MemSQL is able to run on the cloud very, very nicely because it's a naturally, inherently distributed type of software package. So it really shifted from the physics of it, which was vertical scale versus horizontal scale, later then to the business type of use cases around real-time analytics, business intelligence in real-time, customer 360, financial analysis and risk exposure. All the use cases came a little later as we saw repeatability with certain sets of our customers. So I think in terms of creating a startup like NumSQL, you have to have sound first principles. You have to make a statement about the future of the world, and you have to have a very strong and adamant belief that that picture, that vision, will become a reality. And it was our belief 6 years ago that the world would need a distributed database to process the next generation of its applications. And we're seeing that happen, of course, just as more businesses go to the cloud today.
And you are a first-time entrepreneur. Who coached you through all this? How did you learn all this?
This was a lot of, help along the way from great mentors and advisors. As you work with your angels, and when we started the company, we were raising from angels in the Valley, that they provided a lot of help. But functionally, you want to have, a good founding team, where you have someone like myself who is an engineer by background, but I had really put my effort in a sales engineering capacity, and my co-founder was the true technology innovator and engineer. So we have a very yin-yang relationship because I do one thing for the business and Nikita does the other. So there was a very great way to actually work together to make this a reality. I very much focused on the fundamentals, the market dynamics, the gaps in the market, the research into companies that had tried what we've done and failed along the way, and then understanding why did they fail, and then resolving not to do what they have done. So you gradually find your way to a point in your idea where you've exhausted all the potential downside risks by identifying them and avoiding a negative outcome by addressing that negative risk, to a point where you believe that the business model and the idea are really, really sound. And when we had that, that's when we graduated YC and were able to finish up our funding period for that initial seed round. But it took a lot of engagement with industry experts, with mentors, and certainly talking and seeing things firsthand at Facebook and at other companies to say, yes, we really want to commit the next several years of our life to shipping this product.
And what was the go-to-market strategy as you obviously switched to enterprise as your primary market, not these small startups? What was the go-to-market strategy that you followed to develop the traction that you eventually did in the enterprise market?
So it's a great starting point. We had the option of talking and working with early-stage startups and companies versus focusing from day one on the enterprise. And we decided from day one that we were going to be an enterprise-focused company. The reason why is that you have to look at what you have as a core technology and who's it for. At the end of the day, SQL is a very well-understood interface that most developers would find uninteresting, so to speak. They would prefer to use in their own build-outs of applications, some more of a NoSQL type variety. It's more novel. And the real value then for our software was not for the everyday developer. Everyday developer does not have web-scale fast data challenges or even big data challenges. Enterprises have big data challenges. And for that reason, we actually decided to keep the software commercial to ensure that we could actually create a sustainable business. And we also wanted to focus our attentions on what the enterprises needed. So from day one, the go-to-market strategy was to engage strategically with certain customers and prospects. Zynga was one of our first big prospects that became a customer because they really saw the value at their scale of something like NumSQL. I think one thing that's important to mention about go-to-market is that you have to go to market at some point. A database is never done, ever. Oracle, Microsoft SQL Server, IBM, they're all developing their databases 30 years into their own product lines, and that just shows that it's an evergreen type of field. It's always innovating. And I only mention that because you have to launch the product at some point, and we decided to launch our product as an MVP, a minimally viable product, in June of 2012. it was not our full vision of the software. It was only one machine that it would run on. So MemSQL 1B, as we called it, for beta, was a single box in memory database, which could literally only do a two-table join. So this is the bare minimum to call itself relational. And we decided, well, you know what, we can't ship an unleased until we actually provide one type of join to at least say we're relational because that's our vision. So we launched that on Hacker News on June 16th of 2012. It had more than 10,000 downloads in a single day. It was a phenomenal launch. And then we had to get back to work to build the actual distributed version, which shipped in April 2013. So my advice to entrepreneurs is always get to market as fast as you can. There's a saying in the Valley, which is that if you're not ashamed of your product when you launch it, you've launched too late. And I think if you always have a humility about what you're shipping, it means that you're doing something right, which is that you probably need to be shipping exactly then. If you are very happy with your product by the time you launch it, you probably could have launched a lot earlier.
And you've raised $75 million plus at this point. Talk about the metrics with which you raised each round?
Sure. So, you know, in the early days, the seed round is literally an experimentation round where investors are willing to invest $1 million to $2 million typically just to validate the thesis, the hypothesis really of the idea, of the startup. After you have proven that there is validity in the hypothesis, you have some evidence that the startup is going to be a real type of company. At that point, you can then progress to Series A. Series A is really where you can start doing a lot more go-to-market. You're still very early. Typically, you might have, in our case, still very little revenue, just a few hundred thousand dollars a year in revenue. But it gives you the ability then to go and take the team from 10 to about 25 to 30. You can start hiring out a few more core functions that one person was doing previously. So for the first 2 years, it was myself and 9 engineers. That was it. Everything, whether it was taking out the trash, running payroll, whatever it took, it would fall on my shoulders because I wanted to keep the engineers happy and make sure that they were working on the software. Series A, you have some revenue validation. You can bring in a little bit of marketing, a little bit of G&A, a little bit of sales. And at that point, you're expected to actually start graduating into low million ARR, 1 million ARR certainly in the early days, but you want more conversion of customers starting to click. You're still looking for repeatability. You're not there yet, but you are now, by the end of your Series A, able to say, here are the set of customers that we have. Here's where we believe repeatability is. At which point you can go for a Series B, which for us was actually a $35 million Series B, to really go to market in a major way. And at that point, you now want to scale the business. Typically, most SaaS companies need about $5 million ARR to consider a B round. So at that point, you really are going out to the venture guys and saying, this thing is working. It has a massive market opportunity. We have X number of customers. Here are the use cases. We're generating this amount in revenue, so we've proven it out. We need more money to scale it. So at that point, you're now at a process in your business where it's about growing your initial core customer set even further. We did a Series C, $36 million Series C a year ago. And for us, that was a point in the process of Series C where you actually start using less of a slide deck and more of an Excel spreadsheet. So in the early days, a seed, an A, and a B, there's a lot of vision that's involved, a narrative that has to be told about what your business is going to achieve. And then by the time you hit a Series C, you are now sort of saying to the prospective investors, here is the vision and here's how we delivered it. And here's the repeatability that we have such that we would like to raise additional capital to actually go even broader and bring in even more revenue. So it's different for every type of industry, but certainly the notion that it's from seed, from hypothesis to Series C, D, and beyond, which is all about scale, that's the gamut typically you would see in these early stage type of ventures.
So the one thing that I would point out is that the Series A has actually moved. Since you raised your Series A, the Series A has moved quite a lot. Nowadays, in the Silicon Valley area, and you know what Silicon Valley does, everybody follows, the Series A investors are looking for $1 million annual run rate in SaaS businesses. Mm-hmm. So unless you have very serious pedigree, in your case, I think actually there's that exception as well. You you're coming in as a Facebook alum, having seen a particular process in action that you're then taking out as to do a startup with a very serious database expert on your team.
Mm-hmm.
That particular that team can go for a fast startup model, but most yep. teams, you know, we work with tons and tons and tons of entrepreneurs, so most teams don't have that kind of background. And for them, the requirement is going to be to raise Series A, you're going to need to get to 1 million ARR. And as a result, we are seeing a bit of a Series A gap. You know, you raise your pre-seed seed, and then you don't get to 1 million ARR, and as a result, it's hard for you to get to the Series A, but there is a you need a bit more money to get to the next level, and there's a lot of companies that are struggling with that Series A gap scenario. But
I heard about the Series A crunch as a result of a lot of bulge in seed investing. So you're right. There's a lot of seed companies now that would love to graduate into
the Series A. In 2013, that's the latest number I have. Actually, I haven't looked at how many since, but in 2013, 71,000 companies got angel investments.
Wow, that's amazing.
But the number of companies that get Series A varies between 1,200 to 1,500. It actually doesn't yeah. change very much.
Yeah.
So naturally, there's a Series A gap.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to see so many new entrepreneurs starting out to build a company. I think that's what the world needs. It's really what America needs. So it is a great thing to see 70,000, you know, seed companies in America or the world that are there. But there will always have to be that filter. It's just how it works. So yeah, in terms of creating a truly successful seed level company that can graduate to the A, revenue needs to be there. We had a little bit of revenue, not a millionaire R by that level for us, but. If you're in a SaaS business, the greatest thing about that, seed-level venture-backed companies is that it's never been easier to start one. You don't have to worry about buying your own hardware. You use the cloud. You don't even have to worry about actually running your own core data services or infrastructure because you can actually lease those from Amazon or other vendors. So it actually left the entrepreneurs focus on the real part of the business that matters, which is typically the problem that hasn't been solved yet. So the reason why there's been so many more companies starting, it's never been easier to start a company, and I always recommend to anyone who actually wants to challenge themselves and grow to do a startup, but to do so in a way where they are very passionate and have done all the research to make themselves believe they can be successful. So you never should do a startup just to do one, but if you have this driving need to do so, I would always be encouraging anyone out there to push themselves and take that leap. You only live once. And for me, it was very much leaving Facebook pre-IPO, leaving it all behind, because I would have regretted never taking that step. So I tend to believe that you regret not the things that you've done, but the things that you didn't do. And for me, if I never left Facebook to try and push myself, I always would have wondered what would that been. So seed companies, I think the more we have, the better. But it does create a lot of stress for those entrepreneurs that have to go and then graduate from C to A and beyond. At every level, A to B is hard, B to C is hard.
I think the issue that, you know, if we have that scale of companies being birthed, we kind of need to understand the fact that, you know, venture-funded startups require that you have velocity. You have to go from $0 to $100 million in 5 to 7 years and kind of show real velocity. And very few companies have those characteristics. So the fact that not that many companies get a Series A funding is actually reasonable, because you can't have 70,000 companies that will grow at that pace. It's just not reasonable.
Right.
It's not viable.
Right.
So you have to define success for yourselves. And let's say you go from 0 to 5 million in 5 years. And if, you know, some companies, some entrepreneurs will have to be, you know, reasonable that is also success if you have a, you know, profitable business and you have a, you know, lean company and you're solving a particular problem, that's okay.
That's absolutely 100% right. I mean, if you own your own business and you get to 5 million ARR, you are a success in your own right. I mean, that is incredible.
As long as you're profitable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of it. I mean, the venture capital is an accelerator. It's its own its own beast, really, because you take on money, you have to return money back to your investors. And investors in IT like to invest in high growth startups. So that means you have a high rate of growth, nominally a phenomenally outsized rate of return. And for that reason, investors tend to take also a very careful look at who they want to back in this space, because they owe it to their LPs, their limited partners, to find those types of businesses. So there's nothing wrong with running your own startup in a self-funded way that's going to get you to profitability without venture capital. That's actually the healthy, you know, way most businesses have been run. Venture capital is really a phenomenon of the last 50 years or so in the Valley. But prior to that, most businesses were self-funded by the entrepreneurs, and you know, they kept on going. Henry Ford started his company, and there was no VCs that were able to back him at that level. So it's great to have an ability to pursue either path, but either one takes its own expertise and challenges along the way.
Eric, what are the metrics of MemSQL right now, and where to from here? Are you thinking about going public, or what's happening?
Yeah, so our metrics are now in a ARR, MRR scenario, and it's worth mentioning how an early stage company will graduate into that arena, where in the early days, a dollar is a dollar is a dollar. So you track what are called total contract value dollars, TCV. TCV would literally mean something on the order of a 2 or 3 year contract, but you recognize it to be AE, the account executive, up front. At some point as the business matures, as you want to get better resolution to annual recurring revenue, you switch to an ACV model, an annual contract value. So the TCV to ACV conversion happened for us about a year ago. And at that point, you are now looking about 60 days away from ARR. ACV typically needs 60 days of accounting to basically flip into accounts receivable and then consider that to be annual recurring revenue into the business. You know, for us, we are focused at this juncture on getting to a sustainable independent company, which is a roundabout way of saying that we are still at this point about high growth. You know, over the last few years, we've 4X and 2X every year. So profitability for a venture-backed company must be on the horizon, and it must be achievable, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a near-term goal if your first order of business is rapid growth of at least 100% year over year. And then by that juncture, because the nature of a business that we have at MemSQL, which is 90% gross margin, it just means that it's very lucrative to actually get to profitability once you're there. So you can delay that a bit as you continue to build the infrastructure, the foundation of your business. So at this point for us, you know, as we've now done our Series C, we have plenty of cash to fund us along the way. And you always, at every level, want to have a plan towards break-even, which is to get to profitability, and a plan for accelerated growth. And for us, we have an opportunity to pursue either. We tend to look at the fact that the market is very big, and it makes sense for us to continue to take all our revenue and fill it back into the company for additional growth. So yeah, an IPO is something that you always have to look about as a long-term goal. And you have to build a sustainable company. You have to bring your own oxygen up the mountain. You just can't think it's going to happen, or you're going to get bought as well. You know, the best companies in the world are bought, not sold. So the real principles about building any company, whether it's a Series C company or a Series C or D or E or F, whatever have you, as it gets really, really returned to mezzanine, is you always want to be building a sustainable independent company. And therefore, you can basically direct the destiny of the company to the founders or management's discretion and vision. And that's where we're at, which is that we have a product in the market that is attracting new customers every quarter. We see a lot of acceleration. We've doubled our sales staff very recently to continue this action. So in terms of, you know, where we're at, there's a saying in the Valley, which is, I think, so true, which is that your first $1 million is impossible. It's not going to happen. It's impossible. Going from 2 to 10 million is unlikely. Very unlikely, as you might say. It's just, it's a hard part to get from, you know, 0 to 1, 1 to 10. But going from 10 to 100 is inevitable. And at that point, we believe we are obviously at this point in our business where we just have to time how quickly it will take for us to get to $100 million in LTM revenue.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and learnings from the last 6 years and more, probably. We'll be following your journey, and thank you for participating, Eric.
Well, thank you, Sarmana, for having me this morning. It was a pleasure to join you guys today. I had a fun time just catching up with you, Sarmana, so thank you once again for having me on your show.
We'll talk again.
Cheers.